Today we hear about Paul going from one area to another. And actually in some of the areas that Paul was going there to evangelize in, he had stepped out of the norm, actually. What he had done is normally they would be preaching or to teach. They were going to teach people who were Jewish or somebody that had a religious background so that they didn't have to start out from scratch, so to speak. But in one of these cases, Paul actually stepped out of that and he went straight to the pagans who had didn't know God, didn't have any religious background, and he didn't have very much success. It was a hard go for him. And when he switches areas, he gets involved with, and there's an oddity about this one reading, and that is that he stumbles onto a group of religious women. Now, there's a group of women that meet. Lydia is part of them, but what is odd about this is that it's just about all women, and there's very little man presence there, which is just an odd thing that we run into, and it's unusual that we would see this situation. Lydia is a religious woman, so she already has a religious background. This group that she belongs to is also a religious group, so he's got a nucleus to start with now. He's not trying to say who God is. They already know who God is. He's now just redirecting them and taking them a step further down this path. Now, why Lydia? And it says that she's a woman that deals in purple. Well, just the very fact that she's in business and the leader of her household tells us that she's probably a widow, just to start with. The second thing that we know about Lydia is that she's wealthy. And the reason that we know that is because she deals in the color purple. And I've discussed this before, that purple is a very rare color. It was only extracted from octopus. So anybody that wanted the color purple had to pay dearly for it. So that means she was in a big business. She actually had probably a business that went quite a ways, like even across the ocean and stuff like that. So now that she's dealing in purple and she's wealthy, she's also the leader of her house, which again illustrates that the man is missing somehow. She's probably a widow. When she listens to them and she converts to the next step that they are talking about Jesus, she converts her whole house. And that would be the norm for anybody that ran a household and they have their slaves, they have their regular staff, their children, and their other relatives living there. When they made a decision that this was going to happen, the whole household would change. Now, this is important because of the fact that in that day and age, they didn't have churches as in the building. They didn't have these big buildings to go to teach people or to preach in or to congregate in. So what they did is they would congregate in large houses. And that would take a wealthy person to do that. It also took a wealthy person to accommodate these extra people staying there with them and having the room and the facilities and the money, basically, to furnish what their needs were. So she's offering her house, and they take her up on that. Now that they've got this household converted and they're within this house, that becomes the nucleus for the church in that area. It gives them this ground basis that they can spread out from. So when they actually leave that area, which will come in a few days, now Lydia and her family are responsible for carrying this teaching outward. And because she's an influential person, that would carry some weight with her. And so consequently, this would be the nucleus that they would spread from. And this is a very common thing that they would do no matter where they went. They would establish this nucleus at a wealthy person's place and move on. And it describes it very well here. Now we come to Jesus. And he is talking to his apostles. Now, quite openly, he tells them, they're going to be ostracized. They're going to be shunned out of the general population. They're going to be kicked out of synagogues, probably going to jail. And there's going to be death penalties for lots of them, which there was in the end. And he's saying, well, don't be depressed about this. No, just bear with it. I don't want you to be surprised or upset that this is going to happen, but it's going to happen. Now, I've thought about this. Could you imagine what it would be like if an angel showed up to us and said, hey, I want you to go and preach the gospel from the street corners, and I want you to convert a bunch of people that's downtown. Now, you're going to lose all your money. You're probably going to end up in jail. They're going to beat you half to death several times, and they'll probably kill you at the end. But we want you to stay happy. We want you to stay excited. Can you imagine the faith that they had? Yeah, this is a good idea. I'm going to do it. It blows me away at the level of faith that these individuals had to be able to be faced with this situation and know it's coming and to walk into it face on with a grin on their face. Like, it's amazing. I think Paul himself, technically, if you go through the statistical odds of somebody surviving, he was killed about five times in his evangelizing ministry. Because three shipwrecks, just to start with, the survival rate was zero. Now, obviously, some people survived a shipwreck, but it was so low that people didn't even count it. And he was in three of them, and that should have killed him three times. Then he was stoned to death a couple of times and kept getting up and going back and teaching and stuff like that. And who knows what else happened to him that we don't have record of. And he was just an example of this. And he just kept on trucking until they finally got him. Okay. Anyways, the type of faith that these apostles had, and they're taking this directive right from Jesus' mouth that this is about to happen to him. And by this time, they're believing pretty hard that this is going to happen, that he's not pulling something on. This is going to happen. How do we achieve that type of faith? They had spent, and Jesus gives an interesting little line here, and he says, you have been with me from the beginning. 3 years of absolute saturation of being around Jesus and his word. We come here and we gather an hour here, we gather half an hour there, we read a little bit at home. Could you imagine day and night, 3 years of whatever Jesus had to tell you, you were completely engulfed in? In our day and age, that would take us a whole lifetime to accomplish what those apostles went through. So even though we've been at it for years and we've been coming to church, we've been reading, we've been doing our studies, we've been praying on the side, we've been listening to the Word of God, even talking about the Word of God, what we have to do is realize that by our age today, we're just now entering that element of where the apostles were after 3 years. Not to mention that they had information that we don't even have access to. Which tells us something. Every day that we live from this point on, we are in the same shoes as the apostles, and we're facing whatever type of persecution heads up to us. And it's still our job to have a smile on our face and move forward and actually promote the Word of God. It's still hard to imagine and to feel the faith that the apostles had. But we've got to try to put ourselves in those shoes and that belief level that they have, and knowing that no matter what happens to us, it all turns out fantastic. And that's a hard pill to swallow. But that's what they did. And that gives us a goal of where we should head to and what we should work towards.